Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hey, Reggie, producer slash engineer, or is it a hyphen? Which you prefer, slash or hyphen? Either way, your efforts and your job are much appreciated. Let's get started here. You ready to go? You got your left finger to point and your right finger to hit the button? Yeah, cool. Left pointer finger, right trigger finger. Boom. All right, let's get started then. I'll give you the three S's. You give me the music, I'll give you a podcast. Of course, those three S's, in case you forgot, my friend. Do you remember what the three S's are? You're too young to know it, but there was a movie called Broadway Danny Rose, a great, great Woody Allen movie, where he played a talent agent for some really bad low-rent acts, like parrot acts and cheap musicians and cheap psychics and ventriloquists and you name it. They weren't very talented, but Broadway Danny Rose believed in them and worked his butt off for them. And regardless of how bad their acts were or unsuccessful they were, he always believed in them. And before they went on stage, he told them, in fact, he told his balloon, folders and sculptors, you know, the people like, you know, when you go to a kiddie party and they fold balloons into different characters, he had a balloon folding act. And he told them, before you go on stage, because I don't see you just folding your balloons in joints. I see you, in theaters. And before they went on, he told them the three S's, star, smile, strong. And that's why I say those before every podcast, because of the immortal Broadway Danny Rose. Ready to go? Pointer finger, trigger finger, episode 418. Put it in the books. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. But don't forget, listening is important, but just as important as getting out there and telling your friends and your family and anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. And of course, if you like what you hear, don't forget, you can always go to WGNradio.com, go to the podcast section, hit the prompt for this podcast. You don't have to just listen to one podcast a week. You can listen to as many as you want because they're all in there. Well, not all of them. I've been doing this now for more than 8 years. You just keep scrolling down and loading more, and you can get years worth of podcasts of what's been going on in my head since May 24th of 2024. Is that our golden anniversary? This is episode 418. Yeah, is that our golden anniversary since this is our it was on May 24th that we were officially born, and this is 2024. Now, I think the golden birthday thing is the day you're born and the year. Is that right? I'm looking at producer slash engineer, or do you prefer producer hyphen engineer, Reggie? You know what the golden birthday is? You're shaking your head. You don't even know. Okay, so to what I'm talking about right now, right over your head, right? You're like, I don't know what he's babbling on. Here he goes again. Another thing that I don't know why, you know, it's not on the script. Turn the page here. It's the first, second, couple of pages here. Reggie's looking at our very well-scripted show, as you know. You could tell by how, precise everything is. It's very well-scripted. And he's looking at, page three that we're at already. And you're like, I don't see anything about golden birthdays. No, I think it's the golden birthday is the day you're born and the year when it corresponds with the year you're born. Like, so for instance, if you were born on, April 12th and it was 2012, there's the 12 and 12. I think that's the way the golden birthday works. So I don't know if we are officially in a golden anniversary of like that, but I guess the numbers corresponded, right? This is on May 24th was when the podcast first posted, so I guess that's its official birthday. That was last week. And this is 2024, so it's kind of right. I don't know, maybe. Well, I don't care. I don't think these rules are that official or that hard, ingrained in people. So I'm just going to say, yeah, this was our golden podcast birthday. How's that? Whatever. Things happen and go by so fast. Nobody remembers anything anymore anyway. I was just thinking about this the other day. Not what I'm talking about, but I think about a lot of things in between the week that you and I speak. So when I talk on the podcast, this is just one of the things I thought about. I believe me, those other, those 7 days in between when we talk to each other, I think about a lot of things. Yeah, my brain is always moving. I've always got opinions and thoughts on things. It's the only ones that are interesting or hopefully interesting that I decide to to record. But there's a lot of other goofy things that go on during that time, and I have to get the mental sifter out and decide which ones can leak through and actually have some merit. And so far, 418 of those thoughts have come out. But if I think about it too, I talk about how I frequently go off on a little tangent. So I would say, even though officially each podcast has one main theme, I mean, a lot of times I might talk about three or four things in the course of a podcast while I'm discussing a main topic. So I've done 414 podcasts or 18 podcasts now. I'm in the middle of this one. But that's over 1,600 topics, really. Just taking it, 4 times 400, it's easier. But and I was just thinking the other day, when you, it's clear. I mean, it's not. It's in every, and I think it's verifiable. It's validated. It's not just an observation. I don't know if any studies have been done. I haven't done that kind of research on it. But you frequently hear now how people are saying that it just seems like, our society is so fast-paced that our attention span is so short. And especially in the younger generations, I mean, now we're going down to Gen A. I don't know where we're at. We started Generation X. I'm not sure why we started at X. It got us, I'm surprised, when they started naming the generations, right? I mean, they started with the baby boomer generation. That was the first generation that had a name. Because, of course, the baby boomers were and are still, those that remain, are still so taken with themselves, and there's such a sense of narcissism and self-importance by the baby boomer generation that they had to elevate themselves by giving their generation a name. You know, before we used to talk about eras, it wasn't aimed at a specific group of people. When we talked about the past, it was eras. There was the Depression era, there was the World War II era, and things like that. The Revolutionary War era, the Civil War era. They were time periods in history, but they weren't based on a specific age group or people. They were broader, and it goes to show you the perspective. There's no question. And I'm right on the cusp of the baby boom and the Generation X. I kind of fall into both of them. And I could see that I have characteristics of both, especially because I was raised by older parents who were definitely from the Depression era. So I'm all over the place. If you say, Jim, why are your views so, you don't fall into one bucket. You seem to be, you bounce around into every one. It's hard to define you. It's because I have a lot of different influences. I was an only child, so I was greatly influenced by my parents, especially the first, the most important years are your developmental years, those 4, 5, 6 years. And while I certainly had friends, I was mostly on family, extended family, aunts and uncles and cousins and things like that. But for the most part, I was with my parents, right? As we all are. But in another household, you may be surrounded by parents and then siblings at the very least. So those siblings are then exposed to other people too, especially if they're older, they're friends. So there's a variety of influences that that can affect you. But there's no doubt we're all primarily affected by our parental relationships. And so I think even some ways, being an only child, mine were even more pronounced because I was with them the most those first 5, 6, 7 years before you get to school and your world begins to expand and you start to go to school and you have teachers and classmates and parents, parents of your friends and things like that. I mean, your world grows as you grow. But those first 4 or 5 years is pretty much you're in the sphere of your parents. And so not only are we all in that sphere, but being an only child, it was very concentrated. And as I said, they were older. They weren't younger parents. So they were raised in a completely different era that was happening while I was growing up. They were still thinking about and living through and by the tenets and the perspectives that they were raised in, which were many years ago, especially me growing up in the 70s. There was a great revolution going on in our society. And there was this generation gap. That's when the word generation seemed to really take hold. As I said before, historically, we were talking about eras. But when the baby boomer generation came on, they named themselves. Of course they did. They were the most important people on earth. They still think that. Not only do they think they're the most important people on earth now, but they think they're the most important generation of civilization. That's just the way the baby boomers are. There was a new rebellious and and individualistic and search for freedom from that generation. Generations of children before that did not have that kind of cultural power at all. It was for the vast amount of human existence, it was always the older class that steered a civilization, that steered an era, that steered the culture. The children were there to grow up into that culture. But it was always the adults. And you look back at ancient cultures, it was always the younger, the older, wise elders, right? Whenever you hear about the elders, this whole idea of a youth culture really only started after World War II was another one of those watershed times. It not only changed the world from its perspective from this evil that was the Nazi Party and Adolf Hitler and this idea of extermination and world domination and things like that, which just seemed so crazy, and thankfully that was extinguished. But so it not only gave people a different mindset, because I think there was a realization of how bad people could be after World War II, and there was a great exuberance after World War II because of the fact that we saw that evil and good overcame that evil. And so the people at that time, I believe, were happy with themselves. They also saw the results of war firsthand more than they ever had. We've had wars in human civilization since literally day one. But it was only during World War II, because of photography and television and radio and photographs, that we were really seeing the realities of war. It's only been in the last couple of, maybe the last century, but certainly the last 60, 70, 80 years, that we've really become to see the real photos. Even though they were taken, they weren't as readily exposed to the masses of the casualties and realities of war. We heard about them. But when you see them, when you see pictures, as I said, there were pictures taken of the battles and the deaths during the Civil War. A brutal war. But you heard about them. But there were photos taken, but they weren't passed out to everyone. They were like historical documents, but they were afraid, whoever they were, the power structure didn't want to let people see the realities of war. And so many times soldiers did not talk about what they saw. That's the great difference between a World War II veteran and a Vietnam veteran, was the difference. You constantly hear, my father was a World War II veteran. He didn't see action, but even then he was in Japan after the bombs, you know, when the war was over, the post occupation, to get things cleaned up. So he wasn't there. Based on his age, by the time he was actually ready to go in, he was in basic training. But the time he was done, the war was basically over. So he went overseas, but he didn't see any action. The war was ending. He was right at the very end of the war when he was eligible. But still, even then, he didn't see action. He didn't murder anyone. He wasn't in any battles. The war was basically over. by the time he was ready to go and while he was doing his basic training. But even he didn't talk about his war experiences all that much. And certainly a lot of men that were in some of the worst battles of World War II, where there was carnage everywhere, whether it was, the Battle of the Bulge or D-Day or some of these historic battles, the World War II veterans did not bring it home. They saw atrocities. And those who helped liberate the concentration camps probably saw the worst atrocities of any war in perhaps in mankind. But they didn't talk about it. Whereas the veterans of Vietnam, just 20 years later, 25 years later, because that was a televised war, the American people saw that on the news every night. And the veterans who came back from that war talked about it in very real and detailed terms. We were getting a real sense of what war meant. And as the weaponry got more destructive, we were shown and told what these weapons were doing to people. And you'd hope that it changed our perspective, but we certainly have had war since. Look what's going on now with our conflicts in both Gaza and in Ukraine. We don't seem to learn from history, which is such a sad thing. But there was a different perspective on a lot of things, and. The baby boomer generation named itself. And now we start. So now once there's a baby boomer, then we had to come up with something else. And so then in the late 90s and early 2000s, we came up with Generation X. And since then, we've had a new generation come up with a new tag every a couple of years. And they've been celebrated and identified, and now, of course, like everything else in our society, it's getting younger and younger. Before, you'd wait until a demographic, if you will, a generation was of adult age that would really be having an influence on the culture. And now we're talking about Generation A, I think, that are like 12. But as I've said to you many times on this podcast, if you don't think that 12 and 13 and 14-year-old kids are running our culture in terms of our likes and what we and the way things we do, you're crazy. It's not adults. It's kids. Because kids are into technology. We are copying the kids. The kids aren't copying the adults. It's a complete flip. But I'm not sure why we started with Generation X. We should have started over with Generation A, so we could have, started at the beginning. We started at X for some reason. I'm not sure why or who came up with it. Somebody came up with Generation X and is probably some kind of either a historian or an academic and was looking at the younger generation at that time that were in their, mid-20s. And said, that's Generation X, Gen X. Now, of course, we have the millennials and we have Gen Z, Gen Y, Gen Z. And now I think we're even talking about Gen A. And Gen, Y and Z are going, hey, what, you're already talking about A? We're not even fully through here yet. We don't have time. But my original point is about our attention span. And I was just thinking, we have this short attention span, and certainly younger people who have been, over the last, say, 40 years especially, have been influenced by video games and movies and MTV, all these fast cuts. That's where the attention span became less. Older generations had more patience and longer attention spans. That's why older generations, that's why baseball was the national pastime. because people could go to a baseball game and sit for 3.5 hours and watch the action, whether it was slow or fast, and be entertained. And that's why in today's world of baseball and all the other sports, we've got 24-second shot clocks. We've got 19-second or 18-second, whatever it is, pitch clocks. We're shortening it up. Let's go. Let's get some action. We need action. We can't sit and wait. We've got to have something always happening. We need to be stimulated in a constant pace. Like I said, I think that came from growing up watching video games, playing video games, watching MTV, getting on your computer, instant gratification. And I was just thinking the other day, as I said, I have a lot of thoughts during the week. I just talk about one a week. But when even the generation now, let's say when the end of the baby boomers and even say Generation X, fades off in the next 30 or 40 years, right? It's going to really be a fast-paced society, because those of us who are older, we're still clinging to and at least imposing some patience in our society, even though we're being overcome by the newer generations and their influence and their shorter attention span, and we're having to acclimate to them. But there's still some sense of, well, geez, slow down. Because we remember things, we remember a life that was much slower. But the generations of today, starting with X, and certainly Y, they don't have that muscle memory of, well, remember how things were slower? No, they've always been in a fast-paced world. Short attention span world, quick cuts, action all the time. They don't have anything to think back on. They think that's the norm. And every generation after them will only look at the world with an even faster pace than the other. But that idea of a patient society will be gone in the next 30 to 40 years. I can only imagine how fast-paced it will be in 40 or 50 years from now, because we'll have generations that won't even understand what a patient attention span is. They won't even recognize it. They won't even hearken back to it, because it doesn't really exist in their mind or their instincts. So, wow, are things going to be moving fast in the next 30 or 40 years? Whew. If you think things are moving fast now, wait till the generation that remembers a slower time leaves and there's no influence of that or recognition of that at all. Hoofa! But as I say so often, but I digress. Reggie, he's sitting there going, wow, he just did almost a half hour. And as I said, we're looking at page 24 of the script, and that nothing of that discussion was prearranged. Now, that was all off the top of my head, my friend. Either impressive or scary, depending on your perspective. So here's what I really want to talk about today. Still mystified by things. I think that's the one thing. I've always been inquisitive. I think I told you several podcasts ago, I was looking through my baby book, where my mom was, especially the first several years of my life, diligently recording and documenting everything. The first time I rolled over, first time I cooed, the first time I grabbed something, they have these books, when did this happen? Today everything is captured on video, but back then it was in a book. And so I have my book. My mom was a great pack rat. She saved everything. And some stuff she saved was ridiculous, and some things she saved
thank God she saved them, because I never would have had some of this information or these records of things. And I was looking over my baby book a few months ago, and I saw that the first sentence that I said, is, what is this? What is this? A question. Inquisitive. I've always been inquisitive. Thankfully, that's what hopefully keeps this podcast interesting. And so I was looking around, and this is somewhat connected to what I was just saying, because it's always questioning and trying to tie things together. And I guess you can sort of say about what I want to talk about today has a little to do with what I was just talking about, generationally, behaviors, self-awareness. I don't care where you are. You have to be, I would assume, by this time, most people have been, now I don't know if it's just a North American thing, you know, or not. That I haven't looked into. Just thought about that right now. I'm going to look into that after I'm finished. Maybe that's something for you to look up. Your assignment today is to look this up. Is the cicada thing that's going on here, this overlapping of the 13-year cicadas and the 17-year cicadas, hasn't happened in 200 years, whatever it is, and that's why we've got so many cicadas and it's going to be so loud and da-da-da. It is an amazing phenomenon. Over the last couple of weeks, we were hearing about the cicadas are coming, and there was almost one of these things that happens a lot with weather forecasting, when they say, there's going to be a big storm coming, and we look out in the sky and it's all blue and there's not a cloud, and you say, what are they talking about? What storm? And then within a couple of hours, there's tornadoes and destruction, and you can't believe it. And it was the same thing, I think, with the cicadas. We were hearing about the cicadas. And we're like, well, I don't even think they're going to happen. I don't see any cicadas. But my gosh, it seemed like within a day and a half, we went from no cicadas to being completely infested with cicadas everywhere. I woke up one day and they were all over our trees. They were on the lampposts in front of our house. Within a day or so, they were all over our sidewalks and walkways and driveways and below our trees and the shells. I mean, it's like it went from 0 to 1,000, literally. Now, I don't know if this is a North American phenomenon, if it's just happening here, or if it's happening around the world. I'm not sure at this time. But if you're in the United States, or certainly where they are, you know, we in the United States here, we constantly think whatever happens here is the most important thing. It gets back to the baby boomer, you know, kind of generational thing. I should mention, too, by the way, the World War II generation, they were so low-key about themselves. Talk about differences. The baby boomers had to name, I just want to go back to this real quick. The baby boomers, they had to name themselves. They had to set themselves apart from everyone else. They gave themselves a designation. As I said before, it was always eras. But then suddenly it was the baby boomer generation. And then everybody since then, it's like, well, if they're a generation, then I want my generation. The World War II generation was so modest, if you will, that it took a baby boomer to name them. Excuse me. No editing that goes on here, right, folks? No sneeze button. Tom Brokaw is basically, the reporter, is basically credited with, and I don't know how much it's stuck or not, because it's quite a grand description. But there's the baby boomers, and I said then Gen X and Gen Y and Y and Z, and I think we're going to A, and there's the millennials. In a book of his talking about the World War II generation, and because what they accomplished, surviving the Depression, the victory of World War II, There was quite a few things going on in those years of the Depression era. It was not an easy time. The world was not that much fun of a place to be, much like today. And so he dubbed them the greatest generation, which, that might be a little hyperbolic, but and I don't know if that one's sticking or not. But because once again, most people are gone from that era, so there's no one there to promote it, sadly. And there may be a time when the baby boomer generation is as dominant as it has been since the 50s, really, since, say, Elvis Presley. Use that as a marker, say the mid-50s, 55, 54. So it's about an 80-year span when things have really changed like that. Before the COVID hit, there was a phrase that was gaining steam, but then COVID just wiped it out because it wasn't relevant in those couple of years. But it was a generational feud was beginning to happen between the millennials and the boomers. It's still there, but it's not as pronounced because, like I said, Generation Y seemed to just all of a sudden overcome the millennials in importance. Yeah, it's just as the millennials kind of overcame the Gen X generation before they even had a chance to really make their mark over an extended period of time. Same thing happened to the millennials. They were fully in charge as the influential group, and then COVID stopped our society and stopped them kind of in their tracks in terms of their influence. And when COVID lifted, we were always all of a sudden talking about Gen Y. And that's what happened to Generation X too. There may be a time when the baby boomer generation fades off, but there was a time in the only about 5, 6, 7 years ago where the millennials were looking at the world and weren't too happy with what they were given from their predecessors and said, and so when the baby boomers would say, well, in my day, things were better, they would say, okay, boomer. And it was a very dismissive kind of phrase, but okay, boomer was gaining steam. There was a definite kind of generational chasm, and that seems to have faded away because now 4 or 5 years later, the baby boomer generation is losing its grip as its population gets older and fades away. But the greatest generation. I don't know if that's ever going to stick again or not, but it did for a while. Okay, back to the cicadas. Wow. Reggie's looking around going, "What now? What page is he on?" Yeah, I don't know what page I'm on. I don't know if the cicadas are just a regional or, hemispheric problem or phenomenon or a global. I'll have to look that up. Or, as I said, that's your assignment. Look it up. But there's no question. Exactly what was predicted has come true. There are cicadas everywhere. I'm not sure how long this is going to last, but certainly we are in a cicada invasion. The ectoskeletons are stuck everywhere on trees, on lampposts, on poles, on branches. Then, of course, there's so many of them around that it's impossible that they don't get squashed, and they're on sidewalks and driveways and walkways and streets and everywhere. And the thing about them is that they're a very docile insect, thank God. Could you imagine if the cicadas were wasps? Could you imagine? I mean, isn't it funny the way nature works? That there's this phenomenon, this great, that it happens, that we can predict it. There's this interval, this cycle of this insect. And they are pervasive. But at the same time, while they're everywhere for this short period of time, they're not a threat. Could you imagine if there was every 18 years, every 13 years, there was the same kind of infestation of like deadly wasps that would be flying everywhere? We wouldn't be able to go outside. Do you remember several years ago, maybe several decades ago, there was this fear of the killer bees? There was actually movies out. The bees in the 70s, there's this swarm of deadly killer bees. That's where the bee skit from Saturday Night Live, the early Saturday Night Live, came from, because we were talking about these killer bees. There were movies, you know, bee movies made, no pun intended. They were bee movies. But about bees, we're all worried about this swarm of deadly bees that could sting you and kill you. There was this great fear, and of course they didn't. They existed and they traveled, but they petered out by the time they get to any kind of real areas of major populations. But there was a great fear for a while of these killer bees that were going to, invade countries and be potentially fatal. And once again, you have to just marvel at nature, because while here are these cicadas, from every indication, they are the most docile insects around. You can pick them up. You can let them crawl on you. I don't know how affectionate they are. I mean, they're insects, but there's no fear of these things. Thank God, because they're everywhere. If they were bumblebees or wasps, we wouldn't be able to go outside, considering how they're everywhere. I mean, one day I looked out and my drive and my walkway and stairs and everywhere were filled either with the shells or the newly revealed cicadas that were learning how to fly. I mean, it was great. If you actually watch them, when they were newly born, when they came out of that shell, they were kind of yellow and white, if you're lucky enough to see one. And then apparently within hours, they matured, which is amazing when you think about, human beings. Most humans don't mature in 80 years. Physically, maybe, but not mentally. But these things have a quick lifespan. And so their maturity level is like sped up. Perfect for a... Here's my connection. Perfect for a generation that has a very short attention span. See, you didn't think, how's he going to tie this talk about his attention spans to cicadas? But I did. It's right in the script. No, I did. See, I always connected somehow. Not completely divergent. It may seem crazy, but I always try to bring it around. And sometimes I do. It might be a dotted line, but I'm able to do it. So the lifespan of the cicada is perfect for a short attention span society, because it's great. We have this thing, it happens, it's cool, it's interesting, and then we move on. That's why the eclipse was so interesting. It took what? 4 minutes. Perfect for a short attention span society. That the eclipse earlier this year in April, that was like the perfect natural phenomenon for today's world. It didn't over, it, you know, there was a lot of expectation, which we always have. It happened. It was impressive, but it didn't overcome. It didn't overstay its welcome. It happened. Boom. And as soon as that eclipse was done, everybody went off and was back on their phones and back doing all their craziness. And that's what's going to happen with cicadas. They're going to stick around a little more than 4 minutes. But within a couple of weeks, they'll be gone, and we'll go, wow, remember all those shells? I mean, right now, it's hard to get them off. Those shells are like stuck. They fall off eventually, but they're stuck. There's a natural adhesive there, and there, like I said, it's not easy to just sweep them or blow them away off your walkways. These things are all over the place for the time being, and we're going to start to hear then the mating call. That's how loud it's going to get. in the next couple of weeks and maybe months. I'm not sure how long this whole thing lasts, but that's the mating call. That's the male calling out for the females. Some things never change, do they? But then this will end, and it won't last forever, and it will be impressive and cool and interesting, but it won't overstay its welcome, and it wasn't treacherous, it wasn't dangerous. A few weeks ago, I was talking about how great nature is, about the eclipse, and just these phenomena, and not only nature, but the amount of intelligence and information that we have as a society, that we predicted that eclipse not only years ahead and months ahead, but almost to the minute and the second that it would happen in certain places. That's amazing when you think back about early man and how it was a completely instinctual, ignorant beast that was trying to figure things out and give meaning to things that it observed because it didn't have, as a species, it didn't have an understanding and a knowledge. And so it tried. That's what we always do as humans. We try to put meaning and understanding, and that's what our brains are. They're logical. As I said so many times, our brain is our greatest asset and our greatest enemy, because our logic and lack thereof is always battling. But now we have such just awesome knowledge and access to knowledge. And now we're going to be close with this AI world, and who knows what that's going to be. And that's a real thing. But we, even the cicada thing, completely predicted right to the day, practically. You know, the ground you're hearing the stories, the cicada hatchings and all that stuff. It won't happen until the ground is at least 65 degrees. I mean, we knew it was going to happen this year in this, spring, summertime, but depending on the climate and how hot it was early enough, it could happen a little before, a little later, because it needed the right conditions. But boom, when those conditions happened, boom, it happened. Completely predicted. Unbelievable what we have the ability to do, and it's unbelievable what we don't have the ability to do. In so many ways, we have progressed knowledge-wise and technology-wise, and yet society-wise and behaviorally and mentally, the way we think, we haven't moved, maybe a millimeter from when we first were in caves. That's the irony. But wow. I was thinking of the cicada thing, especially as I was bombarded when that first wave hit. And as I said, they were everywhere. You know, we had some windy day here last week, and so we lost some limbs off of some trees. And so I'm out on in the yard, in the front yard, in the backyard, cleaning, picking up these errant little limbs and tree, branches. And some of those that had fallen from the tree were filled with cicadas. I mean, it was like, whoa. I mean, I didn't even want to disturb them because they were living. They weren't with the outer skeleton part. They were sitting there. I'm like, well, I'm they're minding their own business. I guess that could sit there for a while. They're not, it's hard. At one point, it's hard not to kill a cicada because they're everywhere. You're walking and crunch, oops. You're driving on your driveway, oops. But as I said before, they're so docile. They're like the perfect insect. Especially since, you know, I mean, you know, in our world today, anything that you put batter on and you put into some hot oil is delicious. People are eating cicadas. It just goes to show. And apparently, once again, you have to marvel at nature, because from what I'm reading, too, is that the cicada shells and ultimately the cicadas themselves, because they have a short lifespan, they will die. They will, but they are great fertilizer. And so I'm not the first one to point this out, but I think it's important to take a step back every so often, because we take so much about the world around us for granted in our little goofy lives. We live in a bubble, and we every so often we need to take a step back and look at this. That's why I often go to places around here in the Chicago area, like the Morton Arboretum and the Chicago Botanic Garden, because, you know, I live in an urban area, grew up and lived, you know, my whole life I've lived in urban areas, and I always enjoy going to more, pastoral or rural areas, because it's a whole different reality. And I think more people, we need to look at what's going on around us. And like, okay, so this cicada thing happened, and it's been a nuisance to some extent. Like I said, they're all over the place, blah, blah, blah. But even those, they will get naturally absorbed into the ground, into the earth, and it will help nourish the earth. It's the nature and the earth, it's self-nourishing. You know, we work hard to keep ourselves alive, right? Especially with modern medicine. You know, we are a decaying entity from the first day we're born. We're getting older. And yet the earth and nature is self-sustaining. All these little things that happen on a daily basis that are nuisances to us. Believe me, I've got a yard here. You know, those little whirly bird things that fall off the trees. Oh, my gosh. They're everywhere. But that's the way that trees sustain themselves. And there were these other little things that were coming off another tree. They were like little spiggoty things. They almost looked like a long COVID molecule, you know, the little spikes. I don't know what they are, but they were all over my yard, all over my driveway, over the patio. These little green things, these little spikes on each side, little long things. I'm not sure what they are, what tree they were from, but man, they were everywhere. It's amazing how the world, our globe, our planet is so self-sustaining. That's why for us to say we want to save the planet is the most ridiculous and arrogant thing. We need to save ourselves. The planet's going to continues. The planet takes care of itself. It's our arrogance to think that we can save the planet. The planet can engulf us anytime it wants. And it has. And it just might. Save humanity? Yes. Save the planet? Silly, ridiculous, stupid phrase. Arrogant phrase. An arrogant human phrase. But just think about you want to talk about taking a step back and appreciating this interesting collaborative effort of our knowledge, our ability to predict things about our environment and what this country and what this planet does naturally on its own. We have been able to, through our knowledge, we've been able. Now, there's some things that we can't stop these things, but we can predict them. If you watch the weather reports now, they are ridiculously accurate. There's some of us that are, you know, once again, if you've lived a longer time, you remember when weather forecasting was not an exact science, and sometimes they would miss it completely. And so we still have that in the back of our minds, like, oh, these weather people don't know what they're talking about. That's if you say that, that you are dating yourself, because today they are very accurate, whether we want to admit it or not. It's not guesswork. The technology that has been created to predict our weather is so sophisticated, and for the most part, I would say that it probably hits right on to an 80% or 90% prediction level now. I don't have any numbers. I'm just seeing from what I see. Where, like I said before, sometimes there's a blue sky with not a cloud. They say, well, what do you mean rain? And sure enough, within an hour, there's that rain. They see it. They are able to calibrate the atmosphere down to such a basic degrees and basic elements that they know what causes the weather, and when the elements are there to cause those phenomena, they do happen and they can predict them. Weather forecasting is not some guesswork like it was before, say 30 or 40 years ago. Far from it. And so as we're learning now, so is geology. So is astronomy. As crazy as that sounds, we still don't know the whys. But we're gaining more and more interest or information on the hows. With these telescopes that are going out into the farthest reaches of the galaxy, the Webb, first the Hubble and now the Webb telescope. We're seeing at least how. We don't know why. But we're gaining more information on the how. Perfect example of, once again, think about modern man, and we're taking, and this happens so gradually that we don't even recognize it. But when I saw these cicadas everywhere, it was bringing a lot of different thoughts into my mind. Not only about just the phenomenon of it and how we can predict it and some of the things I talked about, but as I saw them, this infestation everywhere on the trees, surrounded, everywhere you look, you're crunching, you're walking. Okay, we have been told that the cicada is, that this happens every 17 or 18 years, and blah, 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 there's a different, 13-year, 17-year, whatever, and they're docile, they're nice, here's what happens. We have a ton of information on cicadas. We have a ton of information on everything. Sadly, we don't take advantage of that. We're more interested in, Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. But wow, there's just a massive amount of information out there. So we've got the cicada thing pretty much down, I would say. And I'm thinking about, let's rewind. Here we are in 2024, and we say, okay, cicada, there's going to be a big cicada infestation, a 13-year and a 17-year gestation that's going to overlapping. The first time it's happened in 200 years. Here's what's going to happen. Here's how long it's going to happen. Here's why it's happening. Here's what's happening, and blah, blah, blah. And sure enough, it happens. And we take it for granted, and we go, this is cool. And as I said, then with our short attention span, we move on. Let's rewind 5,000 years ago. I was talking about this to some extent with the eclipse. You had primitive man, let's just use the biblical times, 5,000 years ago or so. In biblical times, when people were actually beginning to write these things down, what they were observing, man was ignorant, and I'm not disparaging. Man was an ignorant beast, it was an ignorant species. We didn't know, we didn't have the knowledge that we now have of nature. 5,000 years ago, we were still thinking that the weather was acts of God. The thunder was God is anger at us, tornadoes, and this was God being, we were trying to put some meaning to this because we didn't know what was happening around us. So we tried to put concepts that our brains could wrap around onto natural phenomena. Well, now, of course, so many of those are completely ridiculous because we now know what causes thunder. We know what causes a tornado. We can predict it. There isn't somebody up there, you know, spinning the winds and punishing people with different natural disasters. These aren't punishments. This is nature, and we know that. We have the experience. We have the knowledge. We can predict it. There's still people that cling to those, but we know why this is happening. You can predict it. We predicted the cicada thing. And I tell you, it was if you were anywhere around where there were, it was kind of a weird thing. Like, whoa. Everywhere you looked, there were these bugs. And they're not pretty. They may be docile, but they're not pretty. They got these red eyes and these big black faces and these big wings. And, you know, they're not pretty. They're harmless. But they're not pretty. And they're laying everywhere. They're hanging on everything. It's kind of eerie. We're not afraid of them now because we have the knowledge that don't fear them. They're not going to sting you. They're not going to bite you. So as I said, hey, let them be. They're on a branch. Let them be. You know, they're going to be around. They're only going to be around for, let them enjoy their time on Earth. You know, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago, if you would have saw a branch with a bunch of cicadas on it, you would have destroyed those as quickly as you can. Ugh! Now we go, oh, live and let live. We have a better understanding that we are a part of nature. We don't rule nature. We are as much a part of this entire nature world as that cicada. We've been living for centuries with this ridiculous proposition that we had dominion over the earth and that we had dominion over the animals. No, we don't. We're a part of it. We're no better and we're no worse. We're a part of it. We'll be better off if that's our viewpoint of things. But I'm thinking about biblical people 5,000 years ago that were looking at the world, not understanding why the heck it was, what was going on, and trying to put human understandable meanings to these, at that time, undescribable phenomena that were happening around them. They didn't know what it was. But we always want to put meaning on things so we can get through our lives. And so the weather, especially nature, especially the destructive things of nature, was always associated with God or the gods being angry at us because there was normalcy when the sun was out. And everything was fine. But then when there was high winds and destruction that was altering our lives, well, somebody must be mad at us. And I'm thinking about now, you know, I've talked about how I love the movie The Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston and Yul Brynner and literally a cast of thousands. Well, there's a great scene in there. And in the Bible, it's there. That's why it's in the film. Movie was based on biblical passages about the plagues. You know, do you remember the part in the movie with Moses and, he brought down the plagues on Egypt as Moses, supposedly inspired by God, the power of God, to free the Hebrew slaves. So he inflicted these plagues. And there were several plagues that came down on humans throughout history, plagues. Okay, a lot of that was attributed to God punishing people. We had to find a meaning for it. So as I said now, think about what we saw and are still seeing to some extent with this cicada situation. And now let's rewind 5,000 years ago. Could those plagues of locust, right? That's all we heard about. There were plagues of locust. Could those plagues of locusts, this punishment from God for some kind of bad behavior that we did, could those locusts, whatever they were called at the time, could they possibly have just been an infestation short term? Don't forget, locusts didn't last that long. The plagues didn't last 20 years. Could it have been that this horrible, the plagues, God punishing people, was really this natural, benign process of the cicadas being born, coming into the world, shedding their exoskeletons, mating, and then going away, and then not coming back for another 15 years or so? Doesn't that seem kind of like the same phenomenon? Yet viewed in two different ways by two different peoples because of information. I'm wondering, I don't know if the locusts, the plagues of locusts were cicadas, but man, all I know is if when I walked out, I was like, whoa, what's this? And I knew they were coming. But if I didn't know they were coming, and one day I woke up and saw these big, ugly bugs, which I don't know if they were, I don't know unless I was told by knowledgeable people that they're harmless. So if I didn't have the knowledge that that these cicadas were going to come and explain the whole process, and also know that they were not wasps, that they were not bite, they were not fatal. Man, if I would have walked out of my house without that information and saw these things everywhere, I would have said, what the heck? If I didn't have the knowledge of what's going on, I would say, why is this happening to my trees? If I had a worldview that nature was some kind of a punishing agent by God, I would say, oh my gosh, I must have done something wrong. I'm being plagued by these bugs. They're everywhere. They're on my trees. They're in my driveway. They're on me. And their skeletons are everywhere. This is scary. But today we go, oh yeah, the cicadas are coming. That's it. So it's interesting to take a step back and see. I mean, think about the last month and a half or so. Between the eclipse, very cool phenomenon, which, once again, in primitive time, oh my God, the world is ending. What made this darkness come over us even for 4 minutes? God must be mad at us. Today we go, hey, let's have a party. There's going to be an eclipse. Let's guy the glasses. We didn't think the world was ending. They predicted when it was going to happen, where it was going to happen, and how long it was going to happen. And they were pretty much right on. They're not gods. They're informed, educated people that have observed that nature has a system and a process to it, and it can be predicted. Prehistoric people had no idea what was going on. So they prescribed these inventive stories just to make some sense of their world. But think about that. We saw this eclipse, which hadn't happened like that in many years and not going to happen again for several decades, and not as impressive as that was. Think about how many different cool natural phenomena have happened just in the last month and a half, starting with the eclipse, which was predicted. Very cool. People celebrated, parties, glasses, took the day off of school, got pictures, congregated, socialized, cheered, saw the effect. Great. 3 or 4 weeks later, completely unsuspected until they were ready to happen, but then once again, predicted. It wasn't predicted months in advance because it was impossible, but then it was predicted, hey, by in another 3 or 4 days, folks, the interesting and mysterious northern lights are going to show up around the world and in some places that they never have shown before, because the sun is blasting off some of these vapors of gas at a high rate that we haven't seen. And so while it's usually up in the northern parts of the world where it's most, the rest of the world is going to wind up seeing it much more easily than they could. So keep an eye open on Friday night and Saturday night. Once again, predict it. And sure enough, there it was. And you saw some of these pictures. I told you earlier, my wife and I, we went to Norway. We didn't see some of the pictures that I saw some people saw in Alabama. That was a natural phenomenon that we predicted. But it hasn't happened in decades. But we explained it and we celebrated it. We weren't in fear. The Northern Lights have been happening around this, in this globe and in front of human beings since the beginning of time. They once again, when they didn't understand it, they were afraid. Oh my God, what is this? The world's coming to an end. God is mad at us. He's coloring the sky. Ah! We go, well, you know, the sun is blasting out some, you know, these rushes of gas, and it's combining with our atmosphere and our magnetic pull, and that's what's causing the light. Could people, primitive people from biblical times, know that? Of course not. So they assigned these other meanings, which mostly were about a punishment from, you know, the man upstairs. But today we go, hey, by the way, on Sunday, you'll see the Northern Lights in Alabama. You'll see the, you know. But so we had an eclipse, which we don't get all the time, this perfect eclipse. It was very cool. And a month later, we get this interesting Northern Lights phenomenon that we didn't expect, but we did predict. And we can enjoy that. Nature putting on a show twice within a month. And then we get this cicada thing. Not as exciting to the eye, not as beautiful to the eye as the solar eclipse was interesting or the northern lights were beautiful, but no less interesting and compelling that the species of bugs and insects will go through this process right before our eyes. So in the last month and a half, between April and late May, we've had an eclipse, we've had northern lights, and we've had this cicada birthing and mating season. We've got very fast-paced,
there you go, short attention span, explanation at the beginning of the podcast.
Short attention span life. We live in a bubble. We're consumed by what we do and what we are in the last 15 or 20 years, thanks to the iPhone. At least more consumed than we ever have been. And yet, within a month, we've had three really interesting and exciting and rare natural occasions that we have been able to understand, predict, experience, and enjoy for their beauty, for their rarity, and for their naturalness. Eclipse, northern lights, and cicadas. You say, Jim, I mean, what's the big deal? You know, no, I think it's worth it sometimes. We get so consumed, we're so fast-paced. I am always and always have been in awe of nature. And so the last month and a half, I just want to say thank you, Mother Nature, for putting on one hell of a show. And I look forward to many more shows and many more encores. I'll always be watching. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there.
And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 418. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears.